Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
As promised, here is the magical receipt from Trader Joe's for $123.45. $123.45, Michael. That's a great
bill of sale.
Did you look at the list of items they purchased?
No, what did they purchase at Trader Joe's?
The carrots of many colors.
Carrots of many colors?
Only Trader Joe's could come up with a name like that. So precious.
He was there for hours to get that number right.
We got
with the carrots.
One more pack of gum.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty, then. We are live at Chatter. We're going to do the show in order. We're going to do the open and then all the segments. We don't usually do that. We usually tape guests. We don't have to tape guests because we have guests live in the studio. We have Maury Povich in the studio. Maury, one of the owners of Chatter, looking suspiciously at the socialite in the back of the room, wondering how he got into this mess. First visit here. Jim Miller is here. Jim Miller, under the phony baloney name of James Andrew Miller, writes best-selling books, including the book about ESPN. And so we avoid, because of my financial circumstance, we avoid anything critical about ESPN. We will talk to Jim Miller later in the show. Gene McManus is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is running the board. We should begin. I think we should begin with the Yankee game. I think we should begin with the wild card game. And I would just read you. I mean, I don't usually do this. I don't know Adam Kilgore.
Is that a great story?
Adam Kilgore's lead. Just listen, if you watch the game, it's one of those circumstances where you barely sat down and the ball started flying out of the ballpark. I'm literally the first batter. So he writes, the 2017 Major League Baseball playoffs dispensed with preliminary and descended immediately into glorious madness. They shoved us out of the plane before we could check our chutes. They turned homerific in the first inning and homeric before the third. It was like you walked into a bar and politely requested a beer. By the way, Chatter does serve beer. It's like you walked into a bar and politely requested a beer, and instead the bartender punched you in the face. We don't do that. Baseballs exploded, pitchers liquefied, somebody threw a trident. Never let this October be compared to a roller coaster, because roller coasters ramp up. The New York Yankees and Minnesota Twins in the American League wildcard game at Yankee Stadium threw haymakers and hand grenades at each other. The first pitch hummed 100 miles an hour. The fifth landed in the seats. Neither starter lasted more than two innings. And that was that game. Like, you watch that game. So Severino can't pitch. Right? He can't pitch. He gets rocked for two homers and then another run. And Joe Girardi does something that you never see. And bravo to Joe Girardi. He goes out and he gets his starting pitcher after two-thirds of an inning, because he says to himself, if we don't get out of this, we lose. This is a one-game wild card. This is the end of the earth if you lose this game. And he brings in who promptly strikes out the next two batters, and the Yankees are able to exhale. In the bottom of the inning, Didi Gregorius, and this is one of the great small stats of all time, because nobody would look at the history of the Yankees and say anything other than the greatest shortstop they have ever had is Derek Jeter. Didi Gregorius has more home runs than Derek Jeter. And Didi Gregorius hits it out, and then in the fourth inning, Aaron Judge, who is the size of Joe Jacoby, he's enormous, hits a line drive that went out in less than a second. And then you went to bed, right, Maury? That was it.
That was it.
That was it. Jeannie, you're done at that point?
Yeah, 7-4. I'm like, okay, that's done.
Jim, you watched the rest of the game?
To the bitter end.
To the bitter end. So what do you think of Girardi and the Yankees and all of it?
First of all, it's a Yankee team that I'm not familiar with. I mean,
In New York.
I do live in New York. I stopped being a fan in 2005 when the Nationals were created.
You're a great fan of the Nationals. You go to all the games.
I don't go to all the games, but I have tickets for all the games. My brother goes. My brother David goes to all the games.
Good. Your ticket. On your dime.
He and that little dog of his go to every single game. But I became a Nationals fan, and my son was a great – my son – who goes to the University of New Hampshire, is a very strange sports fan. He is now a Patriot fan and a Yankee fan. Does not exist.
Right, you can't be
in New England.
Right, can't be both.
And so in 2005, I left the Yankees. I mean, but my years of being a Yankee fan were the great years, were
the
golden
age.
Yeah,
the core four.
Yeah.
All of those people.
And this is a team I don't recognize, but I think Girardi should be manager of the year in the American League, don't you think?
Because they weren't supposed to be any good at all.
Zero.
Yeah, but the Twins guy is going to be manager of League Mahler because they lost 100 games last year and made the playoffs.
Okay.
He's going to be. What did you think?
Well, I found myself in an unusual position, which was rooting for the Yankees. I cannot root for the Minnesota Twins because, of course, they stole a team from Washington, D.C.
That's right, in your youth.
So,
that's right.
So, I hold a grudge. It's a basis of our friendship.
Jeannie?
Yeah?
I went with Bob Wolf for the first year of the Minnesota Twins in 1961. And I spent a summer in Minnesota with my old team.
Killebrew, Camilio Pasquale.
What did you do? Did you
I
on
was
the
Bob
broadcast?
Wolf's, I was Bob Wolf's assistant.
Wow.
I was there for my entire teenage years from the age of 16 to 23. And I went the entire summer to Minnesota to live and watch my Washington Senator team put on the Minnesota Twins uniform.
It was painful. The other reason I wanted the Yankees to win is because I want Judge to be such a superstar that a certain National League...
Oh, you think that prevents Bryce Harper from going?
Would not want to share the spotlight with Aaron Judge.
I hadn't thought of that at all.
I've been thinking about that for a long time.
That is really... That's really down in the weeds. I really like
Okay, good.
Jim, what did you think?
I was amazed with Girardi because I do think that's one of those moments where you get to see why these guys get paid the big bucks and what separates somebody from somebody else, because there probably are a dozen managers or even more that would have left him in there. But I have this annoying habit now I've fallen into of when I'm watching games, I'm also following certain people on Twitter. And it was amazing last night because everyone was referring to this Yankee game. And all of a sudden, at around, 10 minutes into the game, Twins fans go, by the way, it's the Twins game too, okay? We turned it around. Enough with your geocenter crap. This is the Twins. And I still think Molitor had an amazing year. He's a great coach and was a fantastic player, of course.
So the relievers come in. They go 8 2/3. They have 13 strikeouts. They win the game. And the first thing you hear this morning, of course, is they can't do that against the Indians. They have to have better starting pitching against the Indians because obviously everyone moves on. We talked about this yesterday on PTI, and I'm going to suggest this and see what people think about it. Wilbon, of course, went crazy because he believed it had... Wilbon can't stand anything having to do with New York because he's from Chicago and is in the shadow of New York. But among the number of people that want to change this format is John Smoltz, who is the best baseball broadcaster out there, and anytime you hear him on a game, you're really impressed with him. And what he says is that the one-game circumstance is not enough for the team that is there with the most amount of wins. The Yankees won 91 games. The Twins won 85 games. That's a separation of six. That's a significant separation. And he says it's not enough to just give home field, because if you notice, in the 11 wildcard games in the American League that have been held, seven times the road team has won, the team with the lower amount of wins. So he suggests, and others suggest this, if the team with the fewer wins, for them to win, they have to win two games. They have to win two games, not one game. The team with the higher amount of wins can win one game. And it has been suggested that you play a doubleheader. A doubleheader in that one day.
Steel cage.
Now, I don't want the World Series to go into November any further. So I don't really want two out of three on a three-day separation and maybe a travel day and all of that, because then you're pushing it to almost mid-November. But I like the idea of the first day you play a doubleheader. It's in effect a single elimination for the team with fewer runs, because it puts a higher value on regular season wins.
But then,
has everybody digested this?
Yeah.
Because now I want to hear.
Here's my problem with that. You got a team like the Yankees won 91.
Right.
They could use up three of their five starters in one day.
Say, so you didn't beat the Red Sox.
So therefore, now you got to play one of the division winners.
That's right.
And you got no pitchers.
Not only that, you have to play the number one division winner. You have to play them because you're the wild card winner. What do you think?
No, I think Mar makes an excellent point. It's too hard on the bullpen. And by the way, I don't think that remember, this is cash equals truth in baseball, and the TV deals. You have to then you have an afternoon game. You start talking about extra money for broadcast rights on a playoff game in the afternoon. They're not the numbers are not going to be there. I'm not sure it's going to make sense from a broadcasting rights.
There are afternoon games because we at the PTI show we will. There is one series in the American League we are never going to mention because it's on opposite us, and so it doesn't exist. It's not like every game is a night game.
I know, but it's still hard. It's a hard formula, but I think it just ruins the bullpen.
You like one game?
Yeah.
Winner take all. What do you like?
I like one game winner take all. You have an entire season to win your division or to get a playoff berth securely. If you can't do that, go to one wild card game, win or lose. But no more configurations than what we've
got. So you're okay with this?
Yes.
So Wilbon's entire tirade yesterday, and it was absolutely a tirade, was based on the fact that people were saying, well, if the Yankees lose. So he made it only about New York. And I would say, could you, as Bill Parcells said, could you unbias yourself against the Yankees for a little while and just look at it as Team A and Team B? And he goes, no, it's about the Yankees. I hate the Yankees.
Well, the
I
rule
hate
should
New York.
Be then if the Yankees win,
yes.
Then you play another game.
There's an asterisk.
Right. So he went crazy about that. But it was fun to watch. And Aaron Judge, he's – how big is he?
What I really liked, I love the overhead shots of the stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, those
shots
are great.
The redo of that, I mean, they did a great job on that. They really did. That was great. All right, one other thing I wanted to get to in the opening segment. What is today's date? You're the producer.
Today's October 4th.
And when is Halloween?
Halloween would be the 31st, right?
In my neighborhood, Halloween decorations are already up.
Yeah.
They're already up. So that's...
Have you seen the socialite's house?
No.
You ever seen his house?
You
have no idea.
Really?
It is...
Your house? You have it at your house?
It is a stop on all tourism tours of Georgetown. You have no... Oh, boy, I wish I would
but
have taken a picture.
But is it autumnal or is it Halloween?
It is the biggest, the most grotesque Halloween everything. Thing that could possibly get you scared is around that house.
Already?
Oh, my gosh. They had trucks bringing it in. I'm serious. This is not a joke.
So
it's in a Manassas storage place the entire year, and they bring it out, and these people decorate it. I mean, it's an outside agency that does all
they
this.
Don't go Thanksgiving 3.5 weeks before Thanksgiving. They barely go Christmas. They go Christmas right after Thanksgiving. So this Halloween has become like the second
it
biggest
is the second.
Second biggest holiday mm-hmm. in the United States of America. And it's based on this premise. You send your kids to strangers' homes where they knock on the door and ask for candy.
Right.
What? No. That's actually what it is. Nobody in his or her right mind would sign up for that. And now Halloween, in my neighborhood, there's already actual pumpkins,
but
those giant inflatable pumpkins with the green eyes and stuff like that. And Alan's got that? Does Alan have tombstones?
No, he's got skeletons. He's got the whole thing in a... What?
She.
No, okay, it's Nancy. Nancy socialite.
And it's out already?
Oh, my... You have no idea.
Are you the only house in Georgetown with that?
On your way to the National Press Club tonight,
right?
There will be people outside taking pictures of his house. I'm serious.
Wow.
He's got
That's
witches
early.
Out there. He's got skeletons. He's got anything in the world.
This is a side of the socialite that we did not know about.
We didn't know this.
Do you give kids candy at your house, or do you turn them away?
No, they run away. They're scared to death.
Because they're doers, right?
Yeah, doers. Alan sits outside in the car drinking doers. And kids go, we're not going in there. We're not going
but
in
you
there.
But you mean it's a haunted house outside. He's got an actual house that you go into. I mean, it's ridiculous. And it's gotten worse over the years. It started out as a couple of pumpkins. And then it's become, it's grotesque.
It's good to know. What?
Well, I was going to say, you probably don't see this at the refugee Safeway because they don't have anything there.
No.
But at the social Safeway, they've had Halloween candy out and Halloween displays out probably for the last 3 weeks.
That's a big candy. I mean, if you're a candy company
yeah.
and you don't make profit in the Halloween season.
Right.
But it seems really early. It just seems really early to me. Wandering around with a dog at 5:30 in the morning, and the dog sees these things, and dogs, you know, they react in dog ways to these things. This is start tugging.
Now, yeah. I read about some homeowners association that's mandating that you can't put anything scary in your yard. You can't put a tombstone or a skull.
Really?
Or even a jack-o'-lantern because
really?
You might scare the precious children.
Really?
Yes.
Or a picture of people we know well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk to Maury Povich about his life. And because it's always fun to do that.
Oh, shit.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's the Harry's ad, and usually we don't have people here who don't have the Harry's razor, and we don't know if Maury has one, we don't know if Jim has one, everybody who works on the show has one.
That's right.
So we have to get them. Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades that will give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/TonyK. All you have to do is pay for shipping. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, who insist on calling themselves two ordinary guys who were fed up with buying overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality. All products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor, selling directly to you over the internet, which Jim Miller now knows well because he's doing his own podcast and he's become, you know, an internet monkey. To claim your free trial offer from Harry's today, which is a $13 value, and get it for free when you sign up, all you have to do is cover shipping. It includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, which actually does smell well, and a travel blade cover. To get your free trial set, go to Harry's, harrys.com/TonyK right now. That is harrys.com/TonyK.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Playing us in is Aaron Lieber, all the way from Jerusalem. The name of the band is Behind the Sun. Is that right?
That's
Behind
right.
Behind the Sun.
That's
and the name of the song is Professionals.
That's right.
That's a long way. I mean, that's a long way to listen. We get people. We had a guy from Bahrain.
Right.
I mean, we get people from distance. Maury Povich is here, and you heard him in the first segment talk about spending a summer with Bob Wolf, who was the announcer for the Washington Senators, and then they moved and they became the Minnesota Twins. I always thought, I didn't know you did that. I always thought you were a bat boy.
Before that, in spring training, my brother David and I were bat boys in Orlando at Tinker Field for the then Washington Senators. This is late 40s.
Right.
And we were always Shirley's kids, so we met Joe DiMaggio and Stan Musial. And, I mean, we were, you know, always his. We knew these guys. I mean, we never put any pictures up because we knew all the heroes, and so we just assumed that everybody did.
So in those days, in the old days, and they would be old days for you and for me, in the old days, sports writers, they knew what their schedule was years in advance. They knew when spring training started. They knew when the big fights were. They knew when the big horse races were.
Exactly.
They didn't cover the round ball. They a little bit of football, but not nearly as much as baseball or boxing or horse racing.
Correct.
So Shirley packed up the family. You went as a family. Did he pull you out of school?
Absolutely. In
fantastic.
Elementary.
Fantastic. You were like home school.
In the elementary, when we were in elementary school, we all packed up and we drove to Florida around January 15th or a little later. We were enrolled in the Orange County, Florida elementary schools, and they were so bad that they let out at noon, which is why we ran over to Tinker Field to be the bat boys in spring training. And we would stay there until, you know, they came north in the beginning of April or late March.
Right. So that was your life
as a kid. That was my life. When I was like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Did you accompany your father to other sporting events, or was it mostly baseball because that was the longevity of spring training?
Yes, I mean, I spent a lot of days in the summer when I was very young at Griffith Stadium. And, you know, those were the days, Tony, where, and Jeannie, you would love this, You know, you were the reporter. First of all, you wrote the game story, the sidebar, and a column 6 days a week.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And next to you was the telegrapher.
That's right.
And and you would give your copy to the telegrapher. The telegrapher, in Morse code, would send it back to the paper.
Is that right? In Morse code?
Yes.
Wow. You can't do that now. Because you can't be that late. Everything is so much more immediate. Did you go to fights with your dad?
I went to, I'll tell you a famous fight. I used to go with my father when I was a freshman in college, and he said, come to New York. I'm going to, this is a pretty good story. I'm going to the fight. Why don't you come to me and come to dinner at Toots Shores? And I said, well, David, my brother is a freshman at Columbia Law School, so I went up to visit him in some cold water flat up at 117th and Broadway. And now I said we had no heroes. On this wall is this picture. And I said, who the heck is that? And he said, oh, that's the greatest lawyer in the world, and that's who I want to be. And that's, I said, who the heck is that guy? He says, his name is Edward Bennett Williams. Mm. So now I go to Toots Shores to see my father. I think it's a Marciano fight. And
it's good to know you didn't study the law, that you cared only about Joe DiMaggio
of course.
And people like that.
Exactly.
That's good to know. Yeah.
So I go to Toots. Here's my father. We're sitting down. He's his extra seat. And I said, son, this friend of mine's coming. He comes in. I said, I want you to meet Edward Bennett Williams. He's a friend of mine. I said, are you kidding me? You are my brother's only hero in life. He's got a picture on your wall. If I were you, I would hire him as an intern. He's never worked anywhere else.
That's fantastic. So he worked at Williams and Connolly
his whole life.
So you would occasionally go with your dad. Do I have this right? Because I think I remember Shirley saying that at one or two World Series, he ghost wrote the Babe Ruth columns.
Correct.
So how well did he know Babe? I mean, this is amazing to me that he knew Babe Ruth.
When the Yankees weren't in the World Series, he was not only Babe Ruth's ghostwriter, he was Sammy Baugh's ghostwriter.
The quarterback?
Yes.
Okay.
He was the great Redskin quarterback, Sammy Baugh. He was his ghostwriter for the championships that the Redskins weren't in.
So does that mean...
Because back then, you know, they did all that. You know, all these famous guys wrote for papers during the big events.
Except that they didn't write anything.
They write a thing.
Did he talk to Babe Ruth every... Did he at least talk to him, or did he just say, this is what Babe Ruth would have said if he wanted to talk?
The latter.
Yeah, he just made it up. That's good to know. So if you grew up, if you're the son of a sports writer, you grow up, your dad works all weekends and all holidays.
Correct.
And what was that?
It was like my mother had to raise the three of us.
Is that how that was?
Of course. I mean, you know, and I never understood at the end when my father finally retired. I said, boy, I don't know what's going to happen with my mother and father. I mean, they're not used to being with each other. And he ended up being the greatest husband, did all the errands, went to the laundry, did the shopping, did all this. I was just shocked that he could morph into that kind of life. But he did, and
but still wrote for the Washington Post.
And still wrote, mm-hmm. George Solomon, your mm-hmm. editor.
Yes.
He kept him working for 20-some years after he retired.
One of the great moments in my life to remember is the day that Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record, because Shirley Povich was at the game where Lou Gehrig set the last, whatever it was.
He and DiMaggio were the only two who were at Gehrig's last game.
And we're still and with Ripken. And so we're sitting in the press box that night, and Shirley is to, I'm sitting next to Wilbon, and Shirley is to Wilbon's left. And a foul ball comes flying up into the press box and lands, in those days, in Wilbon's ample stomach and sort of wedges there. And on our way out of the game, Wilbon's going to keep it. And I say, give it to Shirley. And he goes, no, I want to keep it. I just give it to Shirley. It's a baseball. Stop it. So he gives it to Shirley. And on the way out of the game, Shirley's just flipping the ball in the air. As we're walking out, Shirley's flipping the ball in the air, and I just thought, what an unbelievable circle this is to have been at the Lou Gehrig game and then to have been at the Cal Ripken game.
Yeah. He always liked the feel of a baseball. You know, I mean, when you think about it.
Well, he's in his late 80s, and he's flipping it
at
this
point. If you're a fan, don't you love the feel of a baseball?
But it's easy to handle, much more so than a basketball or a football.
Yeah.
Much more so. And, much more so.
And it just, to me, every time I hold a baseball, I get a smile.
You became a sports fan because of your dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. And in the old days, I mean, when I was working for Bob Wolf, I would shag flies. I would catch for the coaches hitting fungos. I would take batting practice.
You took actual batting practice?
Oh, sure. And so I always fancied myself as wanting to play professionally. And I stood in there, and I got one curveball from Camilo Pascual, and my foot was so far in the dugout. I said, this is not going to happen.
But you were a good athlete.
Yeah, I was a decent athlete at the Landon School for Boys.
Right, but not
it was the old days. The old days, you know, you played baseball, basketball, football. That was it.
Who were your dad's pals of the writers? Who did you get to meet his pals?
Well, first of all, you gave my father a great compliment. You said one of the joys of – this is Tony Kornheiser. One of the joys of my life was to carry the typewriters both Red Smith and Shirley Povich.
That's right. Because people said I couldn't carry their typewriters, and in fact, I did.
They were inseparable, those two. They had the greatest respect for each other. And if you went to a big event where they both would be, they would be the last two in the press box. Yeah. Everybody was gone, and they were still – you know, bloodletting to find the right ear for them.
Did it? To this day, there are only four sports writers who've ever won the Pulitzer Prize for writing columns. There's Arthur Daly of the New York Times, right. Walter Wesley Smith of the New York right. Times, Dave Anderson of the New York right. Times, and Jim Murray of the LA right. Times.
And Dad should have.
Did it bother your father?
Because
he won this National Press Club Fourth Estate Award.
I hope he's not listening. And I hope Arthur Daly's family isn't listening.
Here we go.
That's the one that really that really messed with my father. My father felt that Arthur was a decent writer, but not at that level.
Right. Right. And your dad won everything else there is to win.
Yeah. In fact, the same award that you and Will Bond are going
right.
to get tonight.
He's the only sports writer to ever win it. So now we've won it. And
are you sports writers, you too?
We're nothing anymore.
I know.
We're television at this point.
I just looked up the stats. I mean, first of all, the last column you wrote was in 2007, and it was about 80 words long.
Yeah, it was a little columnette. I stopped writing real columns pretty early on. From PTI, pretty early on. I stopped writing real columns. Wilbon continues to write, even now. Wilbon will write occasionally.
Yeah, but for
I
what?
I can't.
Where are you going to find it? On ESPN.com?
Yes, you can find it there. I don't write anymore because I don't think I'd be any good anymore, and I really respect it. And I don't want to be bad. I don't want to be bad at it.
So shall I tell you the story about you and George and my father, Solomon and my father?
Sure.
So Tony's hired. Gene, you know,
yep.
And he's hired to be a reporter in Style and Sports, and they give him a humor column on Sundays. My father walks into the sports. I'm doing this tonight, too.
Oh, that's okay. Nobody who will be there tonight is listening to this.
Okay. My father walks into George Solomon's office, closes the door. Rarely would he do that. Looks at George and says, "No one can sustain a humor column. It's not funny. Get rid of it." Walks out. 2 months later, he goes back and he says, "George," closes the door, "George, I was wrong. He's really funny."
That's good. That's good to know. For the benefit of my son who is sitting here, good or bad to have a famous dad? Good or bad when you're the kid?
It was great. When I was very young, I was always teased because of his name. You know, they'd say, "Your father's name is Shirley, your mother's name is George," you know, all that little stuff. It was the best because I followed him everywhere, and you saw the adulation that people had for your father, you know, because he was read by so many every day. And you know, if you look at the history of the Post, I mean, Catherine Graham would say it, Don Graham would say it. In the 1930s and 40s, he saved the paper.
Saved the paper. He saved the paper. Okay. Good for your kids to have a famous dad.
Well, that's a work in progress. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story. I mean, my career is a strange career. I mean, for instance, many, many years ago, my first big national break was hosting a show called A Current Affair, mm-hmm. and it was a big hit. And Tom Shales, the Pulitzer Prize-winning television critic of the Washington Post, just skewered me one day. And I'm reading the paper, and he's calling me every S word in the world, sordid, smarmy, you know, the worst. And I call up my father, and I said, Dad, Shales has just killed me today. Don't let Mom read it. It's really bad. And so, please, get the paper away from her. Don't let her read it. She says, no, don't worry about it, son. You just go about your business. No, don't worry about it. I said, no, Dad, you know, this is really bad. He said, well, you know, I helped to hire Tom Shales at the Post. I said, yeah, Dad, but I'm your son. And he said, yeah, but good writers are hard to find.
You've been famous for so long. What happens? Can you ever, like, if nobody recognizes you in a 48-hour period?
That's bad.
Yeah, what do you do?
I mean, if you're on every day,
yeah.
sometimes twice a day in a lot of markets, I mean, it's bad. I mean, here's the thing. You know, I, from time to time, we're invited to some big, you know, media elite parties in New York. You know, and everybody wants to hover around Connie and find out Connie's doing, what's Connie Chung doing, all this stuff. And I'm sitting there, and all these people who I've known forever, they don't care about the trashy talk show host. So they just don't even look at, and I go, I'll settle this. So I go into the kitchen with my people, and they love me.
The kitchen, they love you. I went through a whole interview. I didn't even talk to you about golf. Do you want to talk about your recent tournament?
Well, I had a tournament at a great
golfer.
For
people that don't know, Maury is a great golfer.
Not
a great golfer.
But I played in a pro scratch tournament at my club in Massachusetts near
your
Cape
club.
Cod.
How many clubs are you in now? About 15?
Not many, four or five.
Yeah, okay.
So and it's a pro scratch tournament. No strokes given, and there are a lot of pro. Mike Goodis from the Senior Tour and Steve Marino and Mark Ternissa from the Regular Tour and a lot of really good pros. And we have some really good amateurs. And so I teamed with the United States Senior Open champion of last year, Gene Sowers, who's a friend of mine. We were tied for the lead going into the second day. And it's the second time I've been in the final group with Steve Marino. And he beat me again. And I'm so upset. And so we lost by 3.
But you've won thousands of tournaments.
I haven't won anything in the last 10 years or so.
Really?
But the best thing was when I made the U.S. Senior Amateur and you were on ESPN and you called me up and you said, I can't believe this. Your father would be so proud of you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to make that. All right, we will take a break. We will come back with news later in the show. Jim Miller will talk about his podcast that he started, which... Is it already
Can
on?
Can I have a shout out?
Yeah,
can I have a shout out?
Go ahead.
Jack Vardaman.
Oh, the great Jack Vardaman.
Better golfer than I am. Listens to you every single day.
We love the great Jack.
We
love
and
Jack.
Blue Funk, the owner of the Showtime, the best restaurant Showtime in the Flathead Valley in Northwest Montana, listens to you every single day.
Wow.
He knows the socialite when he comes out there to visit me in Montana, and he is such a fan of this show. And even you, Nigel.
News when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the tracker ad. This is new for us. I'm going to read the copy.
It's
wallet,
exciting.
Wallet, phone, keys. Why does leaving the house always turn into the world's most annoying scavenger hunt? Whoever said the thrill in the hunt had obviously never lost their keys. Are you always losing stuff? It stopped being cute years ago. Now you just annoy everyone who knows you, your friends, your family, your coworkers, because you're that person who always loses stuff. So it's time for Tracker. Your phone, your wallet, your keys. You know they're plotting against you. They're hiding somewhere trying to make you late. Well, that game is over. So this is what happens. You go get Tracker. One of these. Oh, this is a great note. The zombie apocalypse is here. Now, where did you put the chainsaw? I like that. Is it under the couch in the kitchen? Whoops, too late. You're a zombie now. Get Tracker before it's too late. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. Now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose. On keys, on wallets, place it on your cat. It's small enough to fit anywhere. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has powerful LED lights so you can find anything even in the dark. Lose your phone, press the button on the Tracker Pixel, your phone rings, even if it's on silent. Wow. You can even locate your item if it's miles away because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. So it's like Waze, but for finding your things. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. We really like, keep talking because the ambient noise is killing the commercial. This is the must read. Go to thetracker.com/TonyK to get 20% off any order. That is the Tracker. It's T-R-A-C, capital R.com/TonyK for 20% off. Thetracker.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Lance Brewer. He's from Cincinnati. That was an ode to Bob Dylan at the beginning of that. This is called Sad But True. Michael, get on a microphone and tell the people if they want to send their music in because it will get played. How do they do it?
As always, they can email the show at jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And are we selling anything today?
Always selling. Why don't you look for a sweatshirt? Maybe a mug. Maybe even one of those steel tumblers.
Michael, very excited today to be here, don't you think, Maury?
Yeah.
Very excited to be here.
Well, I'm sort of out of place at this table. I recognize that.
Yeah, because you're young.
That's all right. Nigel, you have news.
I do. And before we get to the news, I also want to point out that if people would like to get involved in a podcast here at the studios at Chatter.
Yes, we're we're renting space.
Yes, you can do so. Just contact us through the website, TonyKornheiserShow.com. And we had a debut of a great show last night.
Michael Farr.
Michael Farr, a financial advisor, the Farrcast.
I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, we've got a special guest coming in the studio today, a bloke by the name of Daniel Ford, a loyal little. It's a great podcast called The Writer's Bone. And At the Movies with Arch and Ann will be taping the day as well. So you're come by.
Money, 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 money.
Exactly. So if you've got a podcast or you're coming in from out of town, you'd like to do one, get in touch with us. We'd love to host you.
Right, because we need to impress upon Maury that the place has potential.
This is a for-profit venture.
Maury has been here for an hour and a half and he's already ready to pull the plug on this thing.
Before I get in the news proper, you asked me what the date was. It's October 4th.
Yes.
This is the 60th anniversary of one of the biggest days in history. Do you remember what happened in this day in 1957?
No.
Sputnik.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
So that was theirs.
Yes.
Not
that
ours.
That was theirs, yeah.
And that,
well, yours, that not mine.
Yes, that affected us.
We it still did. Have
that affected us because that was one of those things where children, when they learned about this, thought, oh, my God, you know, they own the skies. So Jim?
Do you remember what Eisenhower said after the press asked him about how the Russians beat us into space? He said, it's very easy. Their Germans were smarter than our Germans.
Oh, is that right? That's a great line. Well, that's a great line. But we got back. We had Wernher von Braun. We got back. We got back in the space race.
That's right. Big event tonight at the National Press Club.
Yes.
Maury, you mentioned it earlier. You and Michael Wilbon are receiving the prestigious Fourth Estate Award at the National Press Club tonight.
Yeah. What's so prestigious about it?
Well, you're getting it. I mean, that makes it inherently prestigious, right?
Yeah. It's going to cost us a lot of money. We have to spend a lot of money on guests and stuff like that.
You had to buy tables, didn't you?
Yeah, we had to buy tables, write big checks. So I don't know. I don't know how fantastic it is.
Yeah, but
it's going
to
keep me up late.
It goes to their nonprofit.
To their scholarships.
So, yes.
And that's another thing, too. Because they're going to give out a bunch of awards before our stuff. And we're going to have to sit through all of these long, boring speeches by people who've just won awards and who think they're really important. Whereas Wilbon and I know we are not important. And we want to move it along. Because I'm going to go to bed tonight around 11 o'clock. Which means tomorrow is going to be a bad day for me.
It's a good show.
A bad day for me.
What's your normal
bedtime?
Yes,
9:30.
Eyes closed.
9:30, quarter to 10, something like that. So, but I am very proud to say that four different people, will introduce us tonight. We'll talk about this tomorrow, obviously. But Maury will be one of them. We're honored by that. We're honored by John Skipper, who signs our checks now at ESPN. We're honored by Don Graham, who signed our checks for many years at the Washington Post, and we're honored by Bob Woodward, who has won this award himself. So we feel very, very good about that. Woodward has apparently terrorized the PTI workers because for about a week now, he's had them all go through all old clips so then he can put together a montage that makes us look really stupid. And I, as I said to him, when he told me this idea, I said, we already look really stupid. You don't have to do this kind of research. But Woodward, meticulous, doing the research himself. What else you got?
Laureen Powell Jobs.
Yeah, what do we make of this?
She has bought into Monumental Sports and Entertainment. Obviously, that's the group led by Ted Leonsis. It's involved with the Capitals and the Wizards and Capital One Arena. Her investment is estimated to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars and will give her the second largest stake, about 20%. In Monument.
Because Jim is really smart about all of these things. What do you make of that? That's the widow of Steve Jobs, who for a while was dating Adrian Fenty,
right.
Still the former, I don't think so.
No, they're not. They're friends, but they're not dating.
The former mayor of Washington, D.C. What do you make of this?
I mean, look, she's a smart woman with a deep wallet, and I think she's actively engaged in becoming part of the situation, just like Jeff Bezos was when he bought the Post. I don't think that, you know, she's going to stop here. Some people talk about her buying the New York Times.
And the happiest people are the owners of the of Monumental, who are the minority owners, who now finally probably get a payday.
Apparently, her brothers were friendly with Raul Fernandez, who is one of the partners, and they knew each other at the University of Maryland. Yeah, there's a lot of money there. There's the most amazing thing, I think, that I remember when I read about this, when Bezos bought the Post for $250 million, was it was less than 1% of his net worth.
Yeah.
Had that in his couch, right?
Yeah,
right.
Well, yeah, he probably did. Yeah.
New format for the NBA All-Star Game. They're ditching the East versus West. It will now be whoever the two top vote-getters are, they will then pick up sides. So it would be more like a
they've
pickup
done this.
Game.
They've done this in hockey, I think. They've done this in hockey.
And
where
also
they
in football. Didn't they do it as well?
I don't know. No, I don't think they've done it in football. I think they've done it in hockey. And it doesn't change the character of the game. It doesn't really, the game's going to be 184 to 182. they're not playing basketball. This is just a total exhibition. What I would like to see happen, obviously LeBron will be one of the leading vote getters. And I would hope that whoever the other leading vote getter was, that person refused to pick Kyrie Irving, forcing LeBron to pick Kyrie Irving and play with Kyrie Irving for however many seconds they're out there before they don't go at each other's throats. So I thought that would be fun.
Staying with basketball, Wizard, actually, Markieff Morris and his twin brother, Marcus Morris, they were both acquitted in their aggravated assault trial yesterday.
Were they both on trial?
They were both on trial. They'd been accused of beating a former friend of theirs that the relationship had soured, and I guess there was some sort of incident where this bloke was beaten up, and he said that it was all because of the Morris brothers, and they claimed that they were there but weren't instigating anybody and sort of removed themselves from it, and the jury agreed with that.
Are they like the Cray brothers in England?
Nobody is like the Cray brothers.
The Cray brothers in England.
Well, if people haven't seen that movie, Legend with Tom Hardy.
Well, you have to see that.
Yeah. Go see that movie.
You have to see that.
Immediately.
So I think I brought this up before, but I may not have, so I will bring it up now. And that is the commercial campaign by Domino's Pizza. Did I bring this up? The commercial campaign by Domino's Pizza is this. I saved up all my money to build my store. I've invested myself totally in my Domino's store. And now I'm wrecking the store.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I'm putting up a new store. Right. I'm putting up a new store. At no point does anybody say, this is good pizza that we're selling. At no point do they say that. They talk only about the store. What is that about?
Well, they must have had numbers that said people didn't like the look of the store, right? There's a Domino Pizza near us.
Right.
By the way, I think Domino's Pizza is
you
delicious.
Like it.
But I like
But you like
all
full
pizza.
You like
right.
all
regardless,
pizza.
Regardless, as long as it's
right.
hot.
Right.
So they must be responding to that. Or maybe they looked at competition like Chipotle or somebody and said, look what they're doing. We got to do more of that. I
love the fact that they built the brand on delivery and now they're worried about the store.
Yeah.
They
want you to come in and take out at this point, which is something that they never did before. And they're advertising the fact that their store is pretty.
Well, maybe they have delivery problems. Maybe everybody's driving for Uber and Lyft and not delivering pizza. I don't know.
Do you like Domino's Pizza?
No, my son does. All I have to do is look at his body.
Right. So he's a Domino's Pizza guy, huh? I just think that if you're advertising, and you're advertising the store and you're not advertising your product. I just don't understand that.
Especially for that, as you guys say, I mean, you would never walk into a Domino's. I wasn't even sure they existed. Just thought it was cars driving around with pizzas. Staying with the NBA, Mark Cuban says he's considering a run for president. I guess he had talked about he was open to being the vice presidential candidate for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump in this last go-round.
He was?
Yeah, he'd said that. And then he soured.
For Donald Trump?
Yeah, he'd said that.
Wait. They were in a very public war over The Apprentice versus whatever Cuban did
Shark
that
Tank?
One day.
Shark Tank.
Not Shark Tank. Before that, he had a giveaway show, and Donald Trump said his show stinks, and I'm happy. We've played that drop 1,000 times. That's about Mark Cuban, so that surprises me.
And I guess he backed off that, saying last year that Trump has gone bat blank crazy.
Right.
And then Trump fired back, saying before the All-Star game, saying, I know Mark Cuban well. He backed me big time, but I wasn't interested in taking all of his calls. He's not smart enough to run for president. So now in...
A lot of people think he would run for president. Yeah. I actually met him and asked him, but this was months ago, and he said, oh, no, no, no. But I thought he was saying, oh, yes, 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 right?
Yeah, but now, okay, so the list grows. It's Oprah and Mark Cuban.
Oprah...
And The Rock?
The Rock would... The Rock would be good.
Would
be good Secretary of State.
Isn't there a rumor that it would be The Rock and Tom Hanks, that ticket?
I like Tom Hanks.
I would like Tom Hanks to be your president very much.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Cuban is saying that he's...
He's saying he's considering it. He's like, I like to be a guy that could come up with solutions. So if I can come up with solutions to the problems that we face, then sure, I'll dive in there. But if I can't, then I'm not going to do that.
He's probably not going to be wearing T-shirts like he does all the time. He probably has to dress like an adult at some point.
Yeah, I would think so.
Wouldn't you think?
I would think so. Yeah. And again, another NBA story. There is an ad campaign in New York right now with Fox Sports 1. It's all over the subway cars there. You live in New York, right, Maury?
I do.
This is only going on for the last couple of days.
Does Maury look like a guy who takes the subway?
Yeah, really.
I have.
Sure. Everybody in New York does from time to time.
Well, I'll tell you, it is definitely the best way to travel in New York. Trying to drive is ridiculous.
Wilbon said he takes the Metro, and we know that's not true.
And you
he does?
I don't. I don't. I have.
Right.
As Maury said, I have.
First of
all. But it's way back.
I love the learners. I think they're great. Come on, pony up the money
for
a subway on Friday night.
Yeah, you got to do that.
You count people stranded there.
You have to do that.
Well, this campaign is like a two-pronged campaign. Some of the cars have things that say hope, and they have Porzingis, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's the greatest player ever. And then they've got other ones that they say hopeless, and it's they have say, sit here if you're hopeless. The high point of the last 25 years was the movie Eddie. Nothing will change until Dolan sells the team. Well, Jimmy Dolan.
Oh, so they're going after him specifically.
Right, but then they have other things, what's the thing they say about Kurt? Kristaps Porzingis is a unicorn sent back in time to show us how basketball will be played in the future. And they've got, so it's hopeful and all this. So it's meant to create this debate about is it hopeless or is it hopeful? But Jimmy Dolan just saw red when he saw the show.
Well, of course he did.
So,
he's the worst owner in all of sports, right? There's no debate in this. He's the worst owner in all.
He's there.
And he's apparently got very thin skin from the Charles Oakley thing that we've seen developing. So he has demanded that it be taken down, and I guess that is exactly what Fox Sports will do. But it looks like it served its purpose because it created all this buzz.
Oh, by the way, just on a programming note, tomorrow evening we will do a pop-up podcast in here with Ron Darling.
That's
Ron
right.
Darling is in town to broadcast.
He's great.
He's great.
He's terrific.
Right, and he is in town to broadcast the Cubs and the Nats games 1 and 2, so he'll come in here and I've promised that for months and months and months and didn't think I could deliver. And Darling is willing to sit down. I don't think he knows what he's getting into.
Of course not.
I really don't. Okay, so we will take a break. We will come back with Old Guy Radio, and we will talk to Jim Miller about his podcast, Origins. Right? You ready for this?
Ready.
Okay, you sure? I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day. It doesn't go as far back as most of our stuff, but it is designed to have been from that era of the 60s and 70s. This is That Thing You Do. Why are we doing That Thing You Do?
The movie.
Just because we love the movie.
We do love this movie.
One of the great rock and roll movies ever made. That and Almost Famous.
Not a false note in this entire movie.
No.
It's just a great, great film.
And it's Tom Hanks.
It's Tom Hanks.
And we mentioned he should be president.
He should be. And I love the fact, so he has this fictional record company in this movie.
Playtone Records.
Playtone, and that's the name of his production company, Playtone Productions. It's because on this date in 1996, the movie was released.
21 years ago.
Yes.
So, and you, Jeannie, when we talked about this earlier, you said, what happened to Liv Tyler?
I haven't seen her in anything, and she was so wonderful.
The kid who was the star of the movie, the kid who was the drummer,
Everett Scott.
Yeah, I don't know what he does.
They actually, three of them, everyone but Steve Zahn. So Jimmy and the bass player, whose name in the movie is TB Player, like To Be Determined or something like that. And Everett Scott, they got together and they actually played this song live at the Roxy in Los Angeles.
That's cool.
Yeah. And this was written by, what's his name, Adam Schlesinger, who was in the band Fountains of Wayne, which you might know from the song Stacy's Mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I also, as a result of this, when you told me that we were going to play this song today, and I was running around the dial last night, I ran into Splash, which is one of the early Tom Hanks movies, in which he's so very thin and so very young. And I watched for it's a wonderful movie with John Candy.
It's terrific.
It's a wonderful movie.
Apparently he was they went through 15 people before they cast him, and he was and he ended up being terrific. Perfect for it.
Daryl Hannah is there. It's a really, really good
Eugene
movie.
Eugene Levy.
Yeah, it's really good. Terrific. All right, so Jim Miller is here, and obviously, Jeannie and I have known Jim Miller for a million years because he worked at the Washington Post a million years ago with the great Tom Shales. And you did the book with Tom Shales. You were the Saturday Night Live book was you and Shales, right?
Live from New York.
Okay, and that was a best-selling book.
Thank God.
The ESPN book was number one. That was a number one best-selling book, which is amazing. And now you're going into the podcast business. Tell us about it.
It's kind of a different format for podcasts. It's basically every single month do a chapter on the origins of something. So
the origins of species. Are you going to go back to Darwin?
It sounds like a winner. the first month in September, we did the origins of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I interviewed Larry David and the cast and producers and Chris Albrecht from HBO. And then the thought is every month it could be from music, could be from movies, technology, relationships, all different kinds of things, and look at try and trace the pedigree of great ideas and how things happen and the whole kind of shoots and ladders odyssey that people go through when you're starting something big and you have a, you know, it's something that was my favorite part of the books on SNL and CA and ESPN, of course. You know, it's not just a straight line. You know, you kind of take two steps forward, then all of a sudden the bottom falls out and you think it's all over. And yet then some sort of magical moment happens and, you know, you get to the top again. So it's something that's really interesting, and it's been fun.
How long does that take?
Yeah, well, it's a journey because I do think it's important. I mean, the great thing about a podcast is you get to really talk to the people in the arena. So, I mean, I would not have done Curb Your Enthusiasm had Larry, for instance, not decided to cooperate. And so, you know, in these
Larry
chapters...
Larry hates me. He's run away from me at a various times. Cannot stand me.
I think he runs away from people
in
general.
It's too bad because I want to play golf with him, but it hasn't happened yet. Anyway, so he was cooperative?
Oh, yeah, he was. And Susie and JB and...
That's Richard a wonder that he would be cooperative with anyone.
Yeah.
I felt very
my wife tried to hit him up because they went to Maryland together, but they didn't know each other.
Right.
Tried to hit him up for money for Maryland. Not happening.
Growing up, his best friend, he went to Sheepshead Bay High School, Larry David, and his best friend was Jay Bloomfield, who was my very, very good friend at college. And Jay Bloomfield took Larry David to work at a camp I worked at, not that year, but the next year, called Camp Tioga. I'm sure none of this stuff was mentioned to you.
Actually, Richard Lewis talked about the fact that he and Larry went to summer camp together, and then they met each other 14 years later. They were arch rivals at summer camp when they were teenagers and did not like each other, and then met in L.A. later. And Richard Lewis tells the story on the podcast.
So this was not the camp of his youth. He was a counselor at this camp, Camp Tioga.
Okay.
And at the camp pictures, they always have camp pictures that they give to the kids. At the camp pictures, because the amount of the people in the camp were so large in those days, in the 1960s, there was a camera that it was not a one-shot camera. It was a camera that did a panoramic shot. So it took a certain amount of time to get the whole shot in. Larry David ran from one side of the group of students to the other and was in it twice. He was in it twice. I wish I'd known. I would have told you that. You could have asked him about that. And how was he? And he was good to deal with?
Yeah, I mean, the Larry that you see on Curb Your Enthusiasm is kind of a fraud in the sense that it turns out, I mean, look, he's incredibly loyal. All these people that he works with, he's been around with, you know, David Steinberg and Richard Lewis. And I mean, he's a loyal, loyal friend. He has been hanging out with these people for many, many years. And remember, he was on Saturday Night Live for a couple years, only got one sketch on the air. And afterwards, friends told me he was thinking about going on welfare. I mean, he had no career, and yet he was incredibly loyal, very supportive to other people. And then, of course, Seinfeld happened, and, you know, I mean...
Didn't he and Seinfeld know each other from the comedy clubs? Isn't that where it started?
Oh, sure. But even, you know, Chris Albrecht talks about it because he ran the Improv in L.A., and Larry, as a comedian even, was an outlier. He would get on stage sometimes, and within 5 minutes, if he didn't like the audience or if he didn't feel like they weren't to it, he would leave. He would just walk off.
It's not a great career move if you want to get paid.
I mean, he's always done his own thing, and for much of his career, it wasn't particularly successful. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get to the point where, you know, now between Seinfeld and Curb, the guy is the architect, or at least the co-architect, in the case of Seinfeld, of two of the greatest comedies, you know, ever.
I was stunned to hear that the Curb Your Enthusiasm show that just returned to the air had been off the air for 6 years. Had no idea. I just figured it would be 2 years, something like that.
It started its ninth season, and it's been on for 17 years. And it just shows, well, it shows two things. One is Larry's kind of life, and the second is HBO's flexibility, because the show basically comes and goes as Larry pleases. So all the cast is kind of like waiting around, waiting for smoke to come from the David chimney. And when he says go, they go. And to HBO's credit, whenever he wants to do it, they say great.
So to put that together, how many days, how many hours did it take you to get everything? And then you do a podcast, and do you have to distill it or you don't distill it?
Well, actually, there's like two kind of avenues. One is there's five episodes that tell the story of the origins of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And then a couple weeks later, in each chapter, we release the individual interviews that those episodes were taken from. So you kind of, if you want a little bit more of Larry or Susie, or, I mean, J.B. Smoove is so brilliant and so funny. He doesn't talk. There's not a period. There's not even a semicolon in any kind of transcript. It's all just, you know, one continuum. And so it
you
was
know
kind
that
of,
I have to rewind my DVR when he has dialogue, because I don't get it the first time.
No, he's amazing. He's amazing. And he tells a story about his involvement with Curb Your Enthusiasm. Basically, his wife's washing the dishes one night. He's watching Curb, and he says, I would love to be on this show. And he tells his story without any interruption to when he got on the show and how he finally got on the show. That's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, the show is basically improvisational. I mean, Larry has very specific outlines, but there's no written lines. There's no scripts.
Really?
No scripts.
Well, how do you do that?
Because and Susie Essman is saying sometimes she doesn't know until she gets on the set, on the actual scene. This scene is about the two of you are going to fight about something, and he might say, try and mention this word or whatever, but everything else is, and they don't prepare. They don't, Richard Lewis, everybody talked to me about the fact, Ted Danson, you never think about it even the night before. You don't, sometimes
drive
you don't
me,
even
it'll drive me crazy if I couldn't prepare. I prepare for everything. I can't even imagine that.
That's why you can't stand Wilbon.
Wilbon does not never no, prepares. He never
no, but
prepares.
You're fast on your feet. You would actually be you'd be okay, because I mean that's what the show is, and they have many different takes and then many different scenes, and then they pick the best.
Okay, so you go from that, and what would be another one that you would do in an entirely different venue, an entirely different subject?
Well, right now I'm working on a movie, a famous group that the origins of how they got together, and. A project, a building project. So it's like it's all different kinds of things every month.
This was your idea?
It was my idea.
And did you think it would be? It sounds like it's taxing. Did you think it would be?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I know this from the books, is just getting access to people.
Right.
You know, I mean, getting Tom Cruise for the CA book was like climbing Everest on a cold day in your shorts. But, right. you know, you, once you get him, it's worth it. So, and the only thing is that you just don't have control over the timetable. And people talk when they want to talk. And the fact that I might say, well, I really want to get this podcast out next week, you know, they'll look at me like, what are you, smoking crack?
Right.
I mean, you know, I'm on a set of a movie and, you know, I'll talk to you. You know, I'm happy to do it, but I'll do it when I'm ready. So I think the timing.
So you're juggling all the time? Are you working on one at a time or are you working on two or three at a time?
No, now I'm working on five at a time.
Five at a time.
Yeah, because you gotta feed the beast. And you can't put all your eggs in one basket. And then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, I don't want to do a chapter without the key people involved. I just don't want to do that. So, I mean, if it's Fleetwood Mac, I want all five of them, you know, that kind of thing. There's no point otherwise.
So is this, in its way, is this going to take the place, this format, this podcast format, is it going to take the place of books in your mind? I mean, if you plot it out so carefully and you're doing a history of something, which is the exact way you would attack CAA or Saturday Night Live, is this in your mind the next step?
Well, my book agent took me to lunch on Wednesday to make sure that's not the case.
Okay.
I think, no, I still, first of all, I love books. And second of all, the difference with books is that you tell the whole continuum. Because, for instance, with ESPN, it's not just about what Bill Rasmussen did, you know, in 1978 and 1979. That would be an origins chapter, let's say. But it's about everything, the 37 years afterwards. So I still like, you know, the whole history, but Origins is a way to focus on the great beginnings.
I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to say anything bad about ESPN because we like to protect the revenue streams. But when I worked at the New York Times, I worked with a great, great reporter named Murray Chass. Oh. Murray Chass got every baseball story there ever was. Murray Chass was so good at baseball reporting that when you called Major League Baseball for something, they would say, why don't you talk to Murray Chass? You are that for ESPN. Oh, we've reached that point. Where okay. people don't even bother to call anyone there. They just wait to see what you have to say. That's remarkable.
You. Well, Jim, what do you think their next move has to be?
I mean, look, I think that there isn't the difficulty they face is there isn't one answer. There isn't one solution. They're fighting. I mean, at this point in ESPN's history, you can acquit or convict. You know, and I think that they're at a very dynamic moment, and they're trying to figure it out. I think that they have one of the things that Burbank has demanded, Disney has demanded of ESPN is, hey, listen, you lost 13 million subs over the last 3 years. How are you going to fix it? And so they're coming up with that, and they're trying different things with OTT and digital and apps and everything else. But, you know,
I'm willing to go to people's homes and talk to them if it's not a long drive. I'm willing to do that.
Right. That may be the key right there. But, you know, look, and here's the other thing, too. We're in a very quiet period. In a couple of years, less than a couple of years, the NFL rights come up. Major League Baseball comes up. Then right after that, there'll be another NBA deal. There's all sorts. So, and all these college football deals. I mean, John Skipper secured a lot of big, expensive, long-term deals, but they're coming up. And now you have Amazon and Twitter and Facebook involved. And so who knows what's going on? I mean, at the very least, part of ESPN's economic equation is the fact that they have the NFL. So you need to have ESPN. But what happens if they don't have as much ownership of the NFL as they do now?
You have to have the NFL. Right. No, there's nothing else you have to have. You have to have the NFL, don't you think?
Well, yes. If you're ESPN, absolutely.
You have to have that.
Absolutely.
Right, I don't want to lose any more money on this deal. I'm getting out of here.
Plus the head raccoon's in town.
Yes, I know.
That's another thing. I know John Skipper, and you're always, you know, you're Larry David on this. You're always worried and worried and worried.
Always.
And every time when I talk to him about you, he smiles and says, that's exactly the way I want Tony to be.
Well, it's good. It's good. I'm glad I'm old. I'm getting out of this deal. We will come back with jingles and email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Comes Tony's mailbag, got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. gonna read some for all you folks.
That is Gary Braun, obviously, who is in San Francisco at the moment. Before we get into the mailbag, let me say thank you to Jim Miller and Maury Povich for coming on the show today. I appreciate that. I'd like to thank the sponsors, Tracker, Harry's Razors. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, leave us a review. Michael, tell the people about the picture at the picture with Saliza at the Kansas City game.
Oh, this is from the Monday Night Football game. We saw this on Twitter. Someone has a sign that says "Eat It Saliza."
Says La Cheesery.
La Cheesery, Eat It Saliza.
Fantastic.
And it's like it's a beautiful photo. I want to get it blown up and hung up here in Chatter.
Fantastic.
It's great.
From David Sagador, who writes, "The white car was very annoying." This is from yesterday. As your neighbor in Delaware, and they are on as you face our house, the left side. As your neighbor in Delaware, we would have been fine with you parking in front of our house. That white car was someone staying across the street with plenty of parking in front of that house. They seem to do that a lot. They have that old Jeep during the summer that they park in front of both of our houses. Action. Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. There's been one major downside to your recent Friday absences, a woeful shortage of Miss McManus appearances. Let others debate the merits of Saliza versus Sferluga if they like, but I'm leading the free McManus charge.
Thank you so much. I was suspended for a couple of weeks, which is why I haven't been on.
Alex Lau, New York City. Last week, Jason said he was able to bribe Bill Cowher to come on his radio show with Wavy Utz chips, which Cowher couldn't find in New York City. Not to cut in on Lockenfour's leverage, but those chips do exist in New York City, and they can usually be found very close to CBS's broadcast center on 57th Street. Having lived around the corner for there for 2 years, I can attest to the fact that I've found Wavy Utz chips at the G&G Deli and the Food Mart convenience store, both of which are on 10th Avenue between 57th and 58th Streets. Not the classiest of establishments, but they get the job done. Information for life. Little's helping bigs.
Isn't that great?
This show is amazing in that regard. Sam Angel, Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. I think Larry David might be trying to send you a coded message. In watching the premiere of the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I spotted a sign behind him in his office that said, "Mister, he's ready to play golf. Don't miss this opportunity. Have your people reach out to his people to get this finalized. And if you, Larry, and Michael need a fourth, you can feel free to count me in." From Mark Murray in Wappingers Falls, New York, which is in the Catskill area. "Good morning, Tony, especially to Liz and David, if you're there." They were here the other day. "Two people I had the extreme pleasure of meeting this year at Jingle Fest. Sorry I made the two of you get on camera to record your amazing tributes for my buddy's late father. Trust me, he was super thankful, and you are all in the family. I'm forever indebted to the show. So now he's on TV again. Some of you may recall I get plowed over by a shovel in last year's Food Network competition, Cutthroat Kitchen. Jason Fuse writing an amazing and hysterical jingle for my disaster of a TV performance was the highlight of my private chefing career. That and making gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, chicken-free matzo ball soup every Rosh Hashanah using ingredients you would only feed to birds with allergies to bird flu, gluten, and air." This is a long story. This is, who sent this in? Mark Murray?
That's right.
Wow. He was on TV, remember?
That's right.
But he never came to the show. He should have come to the show. He yelled out La Cheeserie. Oliver Goldman, Charleston, South Carolina. "I'll be in town this weekend to root on the Nats. I want to know if you'll be hosting the pod on Friday. If so, when do the doors open?" 7. They open at 7. I don't know if I'll be here, but they still open at 7. "I'd love like nothing more than to take a picture with you and the crew, without Saliza, of course, to send to my dad for his birthday, simply saying, eat it." So that's good. "If you're not going to have a show, how about a birthday shout out to Dr. Jan Goldman?" Done. And we may even give you both.
There you go.
From Jesse Hammock. "Related by marriage to a fellow SUNY Binghamton English major, Jesse Hammock in Easton, Maryland. During yesterday's show, when mentioning Chuck Todd's meteoric rise to 500, you offered that for those of us into numbers, Mr. Todd's record has progressed from 2-5 to 3-4 to 4-3 to 5-2, culminating, so you say, in a record of 17-17. Clearly, your interest in numbers is limited to counting them, not adding them. He's 14-14. So I got that wrong.
Well,
but, you know. Aaron Doherty in Hockessin, Delaware. "If you want to create a hassle for this idiot," and this is the guy with the guy or girl with the white car,
right,
"let the air out of two tires. No one carries two spares, and few people have a portable compressor. You could also go the route of shoving pebbles into the air stem of the tires, but that would probably be considered vandalism. Left on Clover, right on Old Wilmington, left on Lancaster Pike, right on Hercules Road, left on Norman Drive, and P.S., now that school's back in session, it's a great time to hit the beach and Funland. Hope to run into you." Not at Funland. A little old for that. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
but we don't have the chaputzfa to do it.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming.
He likes the color I see. he tried to make a drunk of me. Sad but